This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio.
Johnny Dollar.
This is Brad Porter, Johnny. Miniatures.
Miniatures?
You know those tiny paintings, portraits usually done on porcelain?
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. But I don't think I ever heard of any Reimer collection.
There are half a dozen of them stolen from the Reimer galleries in Philadelphia. Cost us something over $20,000 insurance.
Never found them, huh?
Well, here's the thing. I just got a phone call from Wilbert Reimer. He wants to see you just as quickly as possible.
About those miniatures?
He wouldn't say, Johnny, but I'll bet on it. And he insisted that you and only you be brought in.
Funny, since I had nothing whatsoever to do with the case.
Why not, with your reputation?
But I thought you usually had a staff man
to
secure.
Plus the fact that our company investigator at that time was Jerry Pitcher.
Jerry Pitcher?
Yep.
The one who was suspected of complicity in some of the cases he was supposed to be investigating?
That's the one.
Well, wasn't he suspect in that robbery?
Yeah, but neither we nor the police could ever pin anything on him.
Hmm.
All we could do was fire him and warn the other insurance companies to look out for him.
Fred.
Yeah?
Any idea where Jerry Pitcher's operating now?
Not the least. After the Reimer episode, he simply disappeared. There was talk of his having skipped the country, but nobody was sure of it.
Hmm. I wonder if Reimer's suddenly got a lead on him.
There's one way to find out.
Okay, Freddy, I'll grab the first train.
CBS Radio brings you Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
And now, Act One of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Mono Guarantee Insurance Company, Philadelphia office. The following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Reimer collection matter. Expense account item 1, $8.25, train fare and incidentals, Hartford to Philadelphia, PA. Item 2, 70 cents for a taxi to the Reimer Galleries over on Walnut Street. Mr. Reimer turned out to be short, slightly gray, and very, very British.
Let's go into my office, Mr. Dollar, where we can talk undisturbed.
Yeah, sure, Mr. Reimer. Well, the art business must be pretty good with a crowd like this in the store. Pardon me, miss.
In here, please.
Hey, thanks.
Well, the gallery is rather well patronized this morning, isn't it? Well, sit down, please.
Thank you.
I must say, Mr. Dollar, that I many times wished that you had been assigned to the case when these priceless miniatures that I brought to me from Europe were stolen a year ago.
Oh, how so?
Well, they were so vastly uninsured, sir. A man of your capabilities would have been able to find them for me.
Yeah, maybe.
You, instead of that Jerry Pitcher.
I understand that, although nobody could prove anything, you suspected him of somehow being involved in that loss.
Oh, yes. If only because of his failure to investigate it properly. But now look here, sir. This check has a direct relationship with the unusual number of people visiting the gallery this morning.
Uh-huh. This check was made out by you?
Yes. I intend to put it in the mails before the day is over.
To the Mono Guarantee Insurance Company. $4,050?
The exact amount I received for the loss of one of the miniatures, a genuine Pellegrini.
But you collected something like 20,000 in all.
On the 6th it was stolen, yes. But now, suddenly, and most mysteriously, the Pellegrini has been returned to me.
What?
And, of course, the people out there in the gallery, most of them connoisseurs, would be interested in seeing it again, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I should think so.
As a matter of fact, I've already found a buyer for it.
Who?
Mr. Charles Cunningham, one of my regular clients.
Well, just how did you happen to get this one back?
2 days ago, when I opened the place, I found it lying inside the door on the floor under the letter slot for the morning mail.
Just lying there?
But it was wrapped in a bit of coarse wrapping paper, the sort a greengrocer might use, and it was tied up with a piece of dirty string.
No note or anything with it?
Nothing. They're very mysterious.
But why was it returned?
Who knows?
Would you call it a pretty well-known piece, one that might easily be recognized?
Oh, definitely. And of course, there were pictures of it in the papers and of the others at the time that they were stolen.
In other words, anybody having it stood a pretty good chance of being caught if he tried to sell it.
Well, that does seem to be a logical conclusion, doesn't it?
Yet there's always the black market. I mean, abroad, in Paris. A lot of fine art that was stolen during the war has suddenly shown up over there.
Yes, and I understand that otherwise perfectly honest collectors haven't hesitated to purchase it. Things taken from the Louvre, from various museums in Germany, and... Well, I mean, Mr. Dollar, if the thief were caught smuggling the miniatures out of this country...
Yeah, I know what you mean. But now, why return these to you?
One of them, Mr. Dollar.
Okay, one of them, but why?
Well, there is, of course, one possibility.
Yeah? Like what?
If the thief himself were a connoisseur, one who would fully appreciate the value of the miniatures, well, I'm certain that he would never bring himself to simply destroy them. That is, after realizing that he couldn't very well dispose of them without being caught.
So rather than destroy them, he decided to give up and return them to you?
Well, it is a possibility, isn't it?
But he returned only one of them. And, of course, this theory of yours rules out Jerry Pitcher.
Well, yes. But it's puzzling, isn't it?
Yeah. Wait now, the paper and the string you found wrapped around it.
What?
Where are they? I'd like to see them. Well?
Oh, how utterly stupid of me.
What do you mean?
I'm afraid I threw them out with the trash, Mr. Dollard. It was taken away yesterday.
Oh, great.
You might have found fingerprints on them, mightn't you?
Yeah, and they might have given us a lead on whoever sold those things in the first place.
I'm terribly sorry. It was terribly stupid of me. My reason for sending them for you, I hoped that by finding who returned this one, you might find the rest of them.
Sure.
In which case, your insurance company... Well, needless to say, I would gladly return all of the money they paid to me.
Make them pretty happy, wouldn't it?
But now...
Yeah, they might even feel like handing me a nice big fat commission.
Now I've destroyed the one possible clue.
Well, there must be others, if I can dig them up.
Oh, I hope so, Mr. Dollar.
Or, of course, we could just sit here and wait for the other five to be returned to you.
I presume you're jesting, sir.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Yes. So how will you proceed?
Well, I'll tell you something, Mr. Reimer.
Yes? Yes, Mr. Dollar?
I haven't the least idea.
And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Reimer Collection Matter.
Expense account item 2, 60 cents for a cab to Fred Porter's office at Bono Guarantee Insurance.
And it was about the stolen miniatures that Mr. Reimer sent for you.
That it was, Freddy.
Over $20,000 worth, Johnny. Well, is there some idea now about who might have taken them?
Fred, one of them, a Pellegrini, has just been returned to him.
What?
Yeah, Reimer's sending you a check in the amount your company paid him for that particular one.
Well, who returned it to him?
I don't know. He doesn't know. It was simply pushed through the letter slot in the door of the gallery. No clues, no nothing.
Johnny, whoever returned it must have been the thief. Or someone who knows the thief has contact with him. So if you can find this person, whoever brought it back, we may be able to recover the other miniatures.
Yeah. Did the police really do a job when they were stolen a year ago?
Yes, and the only suspect was that so-called investigator we'd mistakenly assigned to Reimer because he seemed to know something about art. He was familiar with Reimer's place.
That was Jerry Pitcher.
That's right. But they couldn't prove a thing against him. And after all, it was only Reimer's theory that Jerry might have been mixed up in it.
Why?
I don't know. It may have been because of the sloppy way he handled his end of the investigation. And don't forget, it was about that time we learned that Pitcher's reputation wasn't all that it might have been.
Have you got any idea where Jerry might be now?
As I told you over the phone, Johnny, there was talk that he'd skipped the country. Reason in itself to be suspicious of him, if you ask me.
I'll tell you this, Fred. If he did skip, and if he had those miniatures with him, the one place he might have gone to... Listen, mind if I use your phone?
It's right beside you. Help yourself.
Okay, thanks.
Hello, operator. I want to put through a call to Paris, France.
Paris? Johnny...
Just take it easy, Freddy, and stay close to this phone so that you can hear.
My call was to a strange little character whose name is de Marsac, but who calls himself a Chagri, the Gray Cat. His knowledge of the Paris underworld and everything that goes on in it is nothing short of fabulous. Yeah, because he himself is very much a part of it, of what goes on there. Not a single important work of art could ever hit the black market without his knowing about it.
Oui, monsieur darling. This is your oldest, your dearest friend, Le Chagri.
Oldest and dearest friend, huh?
but of course.
Oh, sure. Now listen to Marsak. I want some information. Maybe you can give it to me.
For a small fee, perhaps?
Perhaps.
$1,000 American?
$1,000? You're out of your mind.
Oh, 500?
Maybe a couple of hundred, if it's worth anything.
Now, take it easy, Johnny.
Let me handle this. Now, listen to Marsak.
Well, speak, Mr.
Well, I'm looking for a man named Jerry Pitcher. Ever see or hear of him?
Jerry Pitcher? No, Mr.
You're sure?
Yes, I'm sure.
Then what about the Reimer collection of miniatures? Yeah, there's some tiny paintings on porcelain.
Yeah, but of course, they were here on the black market.
You get that?
I sure did. Go on, Johnny.
Monsieur?
When, de Marsac? When did you see them?
Well, it is important.
You kidding? Of course it is.
Then you will pay me, 400, perhaps?
200. Now, when?
Oh, me. Well, 3 years ago.
3 years ago?
We won the purchase for the gallery there in the United States.
Oh, well, that's a lot of help. But who brought them for the Reimer Gallery? Who purchased them, do you know? Well?
Uh-huh. So that is the question.
That's right.
Well, then 300, perhaps? Oh, it's worth it, monsieur.
Okay, 250. Now, tell me who.
It was Monsieur Reimer himself.
What? Reimer himself bought them there in the black market?
Oui, monsieur.
Ah, I see.
Well, so perhaps it is really worth 400, monsieur?
No, on second thought, de Marsac, I'm afraid it doesn't mean a thing. I'll mail you a check.
Well, of course, the last time I saw it...
What? What's that? Well? Okay, 400.
Mm-hmm, yeah. It was 6 months ago, June.
In June?
Oui, June. At the shop of my very dear friend... Oh, that scoundrel, that terrible crook, Francois Dubuisson, the fence. But not for long.
What do you mean?
Because he could not sell them. They were what you call too hot. Because they were known to have been so recently stolen from the gallery there in America.
Too hot, huh? So whoever had them brought them back here.
Excuse me, monsieur?
All right, de Marsac. Who is that fence that Dubuisson, who was he trying to sell them for? This man Pitcher?
Oh, no, monsieur. I told you I never heard of him.
Well, who then?
Well, alas, I do not know. And with a clever man like Dubuisson, well, perhaps for you, my oldest, my dearest friend, and it might take some time and expense.
Then don't bother, yet.
Well, monsieur...
Forget it. I'll send you a check. Only you can send it to him, Fred. Save putting it on my expense account.
Oh, wait a minute, Johnny. If he can find out who was trying to peddle the miniatures over there...
Oh, you underestimate Le Chagri.
What?
If he's seen them, he knows what they're worth.
So what?
By the time he got that information, you'd have to pay him $1,000, maybe two.
Well, even so, Johnny, if it leads us to the thief and the other miniatures that were stolen...
Leads us to him or merely tells us who he is?
What's the difference?
And I thought you were convinced it's Jerry Pitcher.
Well, who else?
Why?
I don't know. Ask the police. Ask Reimer.
Maybe I will. Or maybe I got a better idea. Item 4, $1.50 for a taxi out to the Museum of Art, where I finally ran down one of the curators, a man by the name of Kingman.
Well, of course I know the Reimer miniatures, Mr. Dollar. Priceless. And such a shame that they've been lost to the world of art. Stolen.
Yeah.
Stolen by a fool.
How do you mean, sir?
Well, I mean the thief would never dare to try to sell them. But such well-known pieces, anyone, anywhere would recognize them, would see that he was brought to justice.
Maybe. How much would you say those 6 little paintings are worth? About?
2 or 3 years ago, not very much. But now that their history is known, well, this often happens with works of art, Mr. Dollar.
How much, Mr. Kingman?
Well, somewhere I would say... That is, if they are ever found.
Yes?
Somewhere in the neighborhood of $200,000.
You're serious?
Well, among them is a body, for instance, and a genuine Pellegrini, yes.
A Pellegrini?
Pellegrini the Elder. And one of our wealthy collectors, Mr. Charles Cunningham, would pay
Cunningham.
Almost...
Listen, do you know where I can find him?
I believe I have his address and phone number in my office.
Good. Come on.
But why all this interest, Mr. Dollar?
I'll tell you about it on the way to your office, Mr. Kingman. Item 5, 10 cents for a phone call, only to learn that Mr. Charles Cunningham was out of town for the day. So item 6, $14 even, is for a dinner, a room, and some breakfast at the Bellevue Stratford. Then early the next morning, item 7, another dime for another phone call.
Insurance investigator, did you say?
That's right, Mr. Cunningham.
Well, can I do for you, Mr. Dollar?
Just answer one question, please. How much are you paying the Reimer Galleries for a Pellegrini miniature?
You mean the one that was stolen a year ago that has been recently recovered?
That's the one I mean. What's the price?
Oh, well, now, I'm afraid that's something.
How much, sir?
It was a private sale, Mr. Dollar, a confidential transaction, and, well...
Well?
I don't know whether you realize it or not, but only recently has the value of those miniatures become...
Yeah, I know all about that. How much, Mr. Cunningham?
Now, look here.
Would you rather be hauled in as accessory to a fraud?
You mean the Pellegrini isn't genuine?
Oh, it probably is.
But you said I might be involved in a fraud.
How much?
I'm giving Reimer $20,500 for it.
Maybe you'd better call your bank and have them stop the check.
Stop the
Thank you, Mr.
check.
Cunningham. It looks as though my hunch was right.
What?
Goodbye, sir. Item 8, a buck for a taxi to Fred Porter's office. Item 9, another buck for a cab for the two of us to the Reimer Galleries.
Will you please tell me what this is all about, Johnny? Have you got on the trail of Jerry Pitcher?
No, Freddy, I haven't even bothered trying. Hey, listen, do you handle all of Reimer's insurance? When are his premiums due?
Well, as a matter of fact, a rather large one, slightly overdue now.
Holy. Why didn't you tell me that?
What difference does it make?
Well, if business were good for a man like that, wouldn't he keep up his insurance payments? Wonder how much else he owes.
What are you getting at?
Plenty. Looks like we've arrived, though.
You know, you still haven't told me why we've come here to the gallery at the crack of dawn.
Yeah, buddy. Now, keep the change.
Yeah, man.
See, Mr. Reimer's already opened shop.
Johnny?
Come on, Fred. Well, Mr. Reimer.
Oh, Mr. Dollar, I am indeed glad to see you.
Indeed.
Good morning, Mr. Porter.
Mr. Reimer?
Look here, Mr. Dollar, here on this table.
What?
Another of the miniatures, a Lombardi.
What?
Yes, lying on the floor under the mail slot, just like the other that was returned.
I can't believe it. Yeah, let me see.
No, don't touch it.
And you see, Mr. Dollar, this time I saved the string and wrapper for you.
Oh? Why? Fingerprints?
Yes, of course.
Only I doubt if we'll find any.
But you were most explicit.
Matter of fact, if you didn't wear gloves in wrapping it up, you were pretty stupid.
I beg your pardon.
Asked that I be dragged in so that nobody would suspect you, huh?
Suspect me?
Johnny, what of Jerry Pitcher?
Who knows where Jerry is, and who cares? Mr. Reimer, when was your last trip to Europe? In June, wasn't it?
I make many trips to Europe in order
in
to...
In June?
Well, yes, it was. But now, look here.
Let's go back to your office. I want to look at your bank statements for the past year.
Mr. Dollar.
Or would you rather I just call in the cops?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Real honest business you've been running, huh?
Of course.
But you didn't hesitate to buy stolen, smuggled artworks on the Paris black market.
Now, look here, sir.
I suppose I should have started thinking when you told me those miniatures were considerably underinsured.
What?
Yeah, because you insured them before their true value really became known. But by the time you did know it, you'd already pulled the fake robbery, collected the insurance on them to keep your business going.
Well, I'll have
to
please.
You tried to sell them in Paris then, but they were too hot. That was in June. But you still needed money, didn't you?
Well, have I denied
so
that?
So you had to bring them back. After all, you'd only collected about 20,000 on them. Now you could sell them for 200,000 at least.
Is this true?
Pretty nice profit. Even after you got through returning what you'd collected from the insurance company.
Mr. Reimer,
and how to get them back? Have them mysteriously reappear one at a time and give out that cock and bull story about the thief not daring to sell them without being caught. Well, Mr. Reimer?
Well, do you think, if I produce the others, if I write and sign a full confession, the authorities will be more gentle with me?
Son of a gun, why do they do it? Won't they ever learn? What's the matter with people, anyhow? Some people, it is. Oh, well, expense account total, including the trip back to Hartford, $35.50. And Freddie, don't forget, a nice fee on this one, as well as a check to Le Chagri over there in Paris. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Harry Bartell, Ben Wright, Horace Lewis, Junius Matthews, and Marvin Miller. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Dan Cumberley speaking.
Johnny Dollar has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison, or the grave. This time I started with a Romanian from left field, got misled in the Philippine jungles, chased a beautiful blonde clear to Venice, and wound up with a friend from Siam, all without ever leaving Los Angeles. It happened like this.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Sword of Cebu.
Where is the office of Philip Marlowe, the detective, maybe?
Yeah, sure. Right around the corner here to your left.
Oh, thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
My friend, you know this Mr. Marlowe, eh?
Well, yes. Yeah, I think you could say I know him.
Tell me, he is a reliable man?
Well, that depends on what you want to rely on him for. Excuse me, will you? I want to unlock the door.
What? You are Philip Marlowe?
Yeah, you're so right. Come on in, Mr.
Never mind. Now listen to me. I will pay you twice what Henry Pound has offered to you. Also, I will add to that $1,000 for a bonus.
Wait a minute. What is this Henry Pound, $1,000?
Please, I have not the time for haggling. We make it $2,000. But you must work for me, not for Henry Pound. You only pretend to work for him.
Now, look, Bud, in the first place, I haven't heard from Henry Pound since I worked for him 4 years ago.
Huh?
Second place, I still don't know who you are or what you want.
Huh?
Maybe you better sit down over there, start at the beginning, and tell me.
You are lying! You are trying to trick me. Very well, Mr. Marlowe.
The short, dumpy man with wild black hair turned suddenly savage, swung a hard fistful of knuckles at my front teeth and piled me back up against my office desk. By the time I got out into the hall, he was gone. I was going to follow him, but my phone screaming for attention inside stopped me. I decided to be philosophical about it. After all, screwballs find me all the time. Hello, Marlowe speaking.
Phil, this is Henry Pound. Remember me?
Yes. I just had a reminder.
I've been trying to get hold of you for 2 hours, my boy. Where have you been?
Out to dinner. Now listen, Mr. Pound.
First, Marlowe. This is most important.
What?
I need your help again, immediately.
Yeah, it no doubt includes a stubby crumb with a head full of wild black hair and a nasty temper that left here on the run 10 seconds ago.
Kurt Bibesco.
Whatever you call him, it's probably it.
Bibesco. Kurt Bibesco. He's the one man I have reason to fear, Marlowe.
Yeah?
Come out here to my place at once, will you, my boy? Old Henry Pound's future is dangling over a very deep abyss by the merest thread, all because the sword is gone.
What sword? What sword are you talking about, Mr. Pound?
From the island of Cebu in the Philippines. The sword of Cebu.
What?
It means everything to me, and it's gone, vanished. I must have it back. Hurry, Marlowe.
Twenty minutes later, I pulled up in front of the walled-in jungle Henry Pound called home and zigzagged in through an Okinawan anti-evil spirit gate. Waded past the grove of dripping elephant ears and ragged banana trees and finally made the front door. The house itself, from turned-up eaves to thatched nipa lanai, must have been gathered piecemeal on Pacific Islands, all the way from Hokkaido to the New Hebrides. It was Henry Pound himself who answered the door.
Oh, Marlowe! You know, the only thing wrong with you is I never get to see you except when I'm in trouble.
That's the business I'm in.
Well, come in.
Sure. Hey, it's quite a place you have here, Mr. Pound.
The islands, my boy, yes. Since business keeps me away from them, I've brought their atmosphere here to me.
Even the music, huh?
All but the mosquitoes. Oh, shoo-shoo. Now, stay away from underfoot, will you? Come on, scat, scat.
Shoo-shoo, huh? That's an albino Siamese, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yes, quite unusual.
Yeah.
But he sheds that abominable white fur of his like any common cat this time of year.
Yeah.
By the way, did you see my servant, Hideki?
Was I supposed to?
Well, when I couldn't reach you by phone, I sent him down to your office to wait.
Well, he must have gotten lost then.
Well, no matter. Let's get on to cases, my boy. Now, sit down, will you please? And listen closely.
All right.
My major business, as you remember, is importing pearls from the Orient.
Yeah, I remember.
And since you worked for me last, I acquired a partner, a fine fellow named Voss in Manila.
Mm-hmm.
With his contacts there and mine here in the States, we've been extremely successful.
Was he the one who sent you that sword you mentioned?
Yes, it arrived 2 days ago, but he sent over half the curios you see in this room. That's why I failed to realize that there was anything special about the Sword of Cebu.
Well, what is so special about it, Mr. Palm?
Here. Read this letter I got from him.
Henry, I'm certain now there's going to be trouble. From one Kurt Bibesco in particular.
The man you saw today?
Yeah, oh, I see. However, I've taken every precaution. Rest assured, Henry, that if anything ever happens to me, I shall somehow get the complete list of my contacts here into your hands. Sincerely, Eugene Voss. Well?
Eugene Voss was murdered 4 days ago in Manila. Murdered for that list of contacts.
You think the sword ties in some way?
Well, I'm positive of it.
Yeah. Well, what's it look like?
Well, it's 3 feet long, Marlowe. The handle and the sheath are from the same gorgeous piece of white mahogany, and literally covered with intricate and exquisite carvings.
Sounds wonderful.
Oh, it is. When the sword is in the sheath, the two pieces form a complete pattern.
Mm-hmm.
I thought of it at once, of course, but when I came in to examine it again, it was gone. Stolen. Naturally, I called you instead of the police. I've got to get it back, Marlowe, intact and without publicity. Why, that sword is worth... what the... Hideki!
Hey, he's hurt.
Hideki!
Mr. Palm, Hideki very sorry. He did not see Honorable Miss Amaro. Hideki was attacked outside the minute he left.
By a stocky guy with wild black hair?
Oh, yes, that him, yes. He find out where Hideki was going, then he hit Hideki. That all Hideki remember until a few minutes ago when he waked up again.
Oh, well, do you need a doctor, Hideki?
Oh, no, thank you. Just the same, Mr. Pound. Hideki already feel much better.
Well, if you're sure, well, now you better go lie down anyway.
So, thank you. We wash head first and be ship-shaped no time.
Yeah.
Very sorry, Hideki was such fool, Mr. Pound. Excuse, please, very sorry.
Well, now, that explains how Bibesco got to your office, my boy. He's our man, all right.
Yeah, but I don't think Bibesco has the sword. You see, he's looking for it. He offered $2,000 to me to double-cross you.
Oh. I can't understand it. Bibesco is the only one who might know the truth about the sword. If he didn't take it, then who... Oh, shoo-shoo, you stupid cat, get out of there. Look out! I knew it. Now see what you've done. Broken my siling vase.
Hey, it was playing with a piece of paper over there. Wait a minute. Oh, yeah, here it is.
Eh?
It's a rent receipt made out to somebody named Saunders.
Let me see it.
Sure.
Received $40 rent 1 month in advance for 812 Front Street, Venice. It is dated yesterday. Marlowe, I've never heard of this Saunders person, yet this thing was dropped here in my house. Perhaps by our thief, Marlowe. Do you realize what a break this is?
Dropped isn't the word. This was deposited.
Oh, what do you mean?
It's a plant. It's a plant complete with name, address, and date. It was left here by someone who wanted it to be found, because whoever has the Sword of Cebu right now might also have it up for sale.
I think you're right, my boy. What do you plan to do?
The only thing I can do, go to Venice and strike a bargain in our favor, I hope. I'll call you, Mr. Pound. I pushed my way out through the jungle of my car, turned around at the dead end of the street, and went down the way I'd come. At the first intersection, leaning against a lamppost, was 6 feet of lantern-jawed redhead in a turtleneck sweater and seaman's jacket. Gave me a hard, steady once over until I was out of sight. Later, halfway to Venice, I picked up a pair of very sticky headlights in my rearview mirror, but lost them again. I turned out of Front Street and finally found number 812 all by itself out at the far end. I parked a block away and walked back. It was a battered, rickety beach shack. I moved in gently and found a crack wide enough to look through. There was no furniture, just one big packing crate, a kerosene lamp, and a blonde. Ho-ho, what a blonde. She belonged in that joint like an orchid in a blacksmith. In one hand, she held a cigarette, in the other, a small automatic. I went quietly to the back of the house, found a tin can, and threw it. Then I plastered my back up beside the door and waited. She came out slowly, gun first. And when there was enough showing to get a hold of, I grabbed.
Let go.
Drop the gun, sister. Come on, give. That's better. Now we can go in and talk, huh?
You think you're so clever.
I get by. Hey, cozy little spot you picked.
You got here, so it serves its purpose. Who are you?
Philip Marlowe, Henry Pond's private detective. Where's the sword?
We've things to talk over.
Your bargaining position is lousy, Miss Saunders.
What's the offer?
Zero, baby. I'm getting it back for free. Now, where is it?
Take your hands off me. The sword is here in the house, but the scabbard isn't. And one's quite worthless without the other, you know.
You're not taking a lot of chances, are you, kid?
The sword has already brought me $5,000, Marlowe, and I've only just begun. So make an offer. Make it good.
You're a liar. So it's not worth one-tenth that.
Not of itself, no. But this one's special, and I know why. And I'll tell you something else.
You bet you will. You'll tell me where it is and fast.
Not that fast, mister. Don't move. Drop the gun. Now you can turn around.
Well, a lantern jaw with red hair. So you were tailing me, after all.
Ah, you said it.
Now, wait a minute.
Shut up.
But I...
Get out. The front door. Go on, beat it. I'll see you later. Now you, mister.
Now what?
Now we sit down, a couple of smart guys, and find a good, sensible way to work this out. Only I'm just a little smarter, because I got the only gun.
Keep talking.
What'd you say the sword was? Speak up, fella. Time's running out.
Sounds like time's not the only thing that's running out, Red.
Somebody's in the back room. Sorry, Tootsie, but now this only works one way. Ooh!
I couldn't tell how long I'd been out, but I felt like I'd lost at least a weekend in somebody's boiler factory. I got back far enough to realize that something was going through my pockets. It was Snaggletooth, had a week's growth of beard, and put the room in need of a healthy spraying of sweet air.
That's a little better. I thought you was done in there for a minute.
Yeah? Who are you? Oh, what happened anyway?
Yeah, that's what I'd like to know. Call me Sid.
Okay, yes. Sid.
Yes, yeah, thank you. I was walking along the beach out there like I always do, and all of a sudden I heard a scream. You know, like it was a wounded cat.
Uh-huh.
It came from in here. And I know this house has been empty for years. Was it you who screamed?
No, I went out too fast.
Yeah. Well, I come a-running, and just when I stepped up in the porch, a fella in a pea jacket come charging out and beat it down the street.
Yeah, I remember. Red and the noise in the back.
Oh!
Have you been in there, that back room?
Me?
Yeah.
Sid? No, I just looked this far, and I found you. What's it all about, mister? What's back in there?
Hey, bring that kerosene lantern, will you?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Here, I got it. Look, a guy.
Yeah, a wild-haired Romanian named Bibescu, with a sword of Cebu sticking clear through him. Dead center.
Now, with our star, Gerald Moore, we continue with the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Sword of Cebu.
While the beachcomber gaped like a marionette with broken jaw strings at the impaled body of Kurt Bibescu slumped at our feet, I quickly covered the room in the back porch, which led to the beach outside, looking for the wooden sheath that belonged to the Sword of Cebu, just in case Claire Saunders had been bluffing. But 5 minutes of that got me nothing more than a little exercise and a lot of salt air.
Well, what should we ought to do now, mister? Call the cops?
Yeah, I guess so.
Sure would like to take that sword.
So would I, Junior. But the homicide boys are kind of narrow-minded. You see, they like their corpses as is.
Yeah?
Come on, let's get to a phone.
Yeah, okay. Nearest one's a couple of blocks away. You got a car?
Yeah, it's out front. Got a light?
Yeah, here's some matches.
Thanks. Hey, wait a minute.
Huh?
What do you do with the conga club?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, the matches ain't mine. Just pick them up off in that barrel.
Come on. Conga club, huh? You know where it is?
Yeah, sure. It's right here in Venice. An ex-marine runs it. Kind of wild, though. Cops raided it once. They had some dancing.
Where is it? Come on, it could be important.
Straight down Front Street, Broadway, then left one block, and you're there.
Uh-huh. Now, look. You call the cops and get back here and wait till they come. Tell them my name is Philip Marlowe. I'm a private detective.
No. No, sir, not me. I ain't waiting here alone.
$10?
That's all?
You heard me here. Tell the law I'll get in touch as soon as I can. Also, Sid, I'll match that 10 the next time we meet if you've kept your mind on your work.
Yeah. Okay. But where'll I tell him he went to? The conga?
You catch on fast. The conga, Junior.
What'll it be, Mac?
Scotch and a little information. Girl named Claire Saunders, dressed in a white linen...
I never heard of her, Mac.
Oh.
I see so many people, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Now, you get what I mean, don't you, Mac?
Oh, of course, yeah. Well, you better make that a double scotch. I'm through. He should have known better. Trusting a fast dame with every cent of his war bonus, a jerk.
Wait a minute.
Huh?
War bonus?
Yeah.
Who should have known better?
Well, I,
Yeah, I'll be with you in a minute, Kelly. Wait a minute. Look, who should have known better, mister?
My kid brother back in New York. He's a vet, Marines. He got his check from the state, and he turned it over to this Claire Saunders. They were going to get married. That's what she said. And that was the last he saw of her. Oh, well, it happens every day. He'll know better the next time.
Wait a minute. I just happen to remember. I know the doll.
You do?
Yeah. Been around a couple of days now. It's pretty flush, all right.
Know where she's staying?
Yeah, sure I do. A ritzy motel about four blocks from here, the Pavilion.
Pavilion, huh?
Yeah. She got bungalow 10 there, Mac. Mm-hmm. I know because she was complaining about it being the N1 and too long a run for the bellhop and a cracked ice detail.
Oh.
You go get her, Mac. And when you do, tell the kid brother that another ex-Marine tipped you off.
Yeah, you bet I will. Bellhop, ice.
Oh, there must be some mistake.
And you made it. There, we're going to straighten it out right now.
Get your filthy hands.
Quiet down, Duchess, now. Sit down, over there. Don't as much as bat a false eyelash.
While you do what?
Take inventory, baby. I know you're alone because I played Peeping Tom before I played Bellhop. Chambermaids do a much-needed job on bedspreads.
All right. So it's under the pillow. So you've got the sheet. Now, what are you going to do with it? And without the sword.
Are you kidding, Duchess? You don't think I missed that back room at the cottage, do you?
You found the sword there?
And Kurt Bibesco, who's wearing the sword the hard way, through his insides.
Somebody was killed with a sword.
Oh, come on. It's a little late for that wide-eyed pitch, baby. It doesn't your carrot-top partner tell you every time he kills?
Marlo, you got everything wrong.
Oh, sure I am, yeah, sure. But just for laughs, let's pass it and you along to the cops, huh?
Oh, no, please don't, please. I'll tell you everything, Marlo. Turner isn't my partner. He hardly knows me.
That's better. Now, just who's Turner?
The man with the red hair.
Uh-huh.
Oh, Marlo, believe me. I can explain everything.
Okay, let's try it. Did you steal the sword from my client, Henry Pound, yes or no?
Yes.
Why?
Marlo, let me start at the beginning. A week ago in Manila, please.
All right, let's have it.
It was late in the afternoon, and I was shopping for a handbag, just looking in store windows, when suddenly I noticed a man hurrying down the opposite side of the street.
A man who turned out to be Eugene Voss, Henry Pound's partner, maybe?
That's right. Mm. I could tell he was afraid of something, Marlo. He darted into a curio shop nearby. A minute later, I saw Turner.
You know him?
Just slightly. We'd met once. Obviously, he was following Voss. But he didn't go into the curio shop. Instead, he hid close by. And then when Voss came out, he shot him, Marlo.
Just like that, huh?
He was gone before anyone knew what had happened. I ran over to Voss to see if there was anything I could do to help. But there wasn't. He was dying. Oh, it was frightful. Please, Marlowe, I'd like a drink. They're on the desk.
When you're through, go on. What happened next?
Well, he told me to take the money in his billfold, $5,000, to take it all for delivering a message.
About the sword?
Yes. I was to get in touch with Henry Pound here in Los Angeles and tell him that the sword, which Voss had just purchased in the curio shop, was on its way. That he should pay special attention to it. And then he died.
Mm-hmm. Well, you decided that 5,000 bucks was an awful lot for playing messenger boy, huh?
Yes.
So you said nothing to the police, grabbed the first plane for L.A., got the Pound's place here, and swiped the sword, right?
I figured if a delivering the message was worth $5,000, the sword itself would be worth a lot more.
But you had no idea why.
Oh, no. Maybe a code in the pattern of the design and the jewels in the handle. Probably not the sword itself.
Yeah, you figured right, little schemer. Here's your drink.
Thank you. The rest of the story
I can fit together myself. You knew you had something, but you didn't know what. So you swiped the sword, you left an obvious clue to an empty cottage, that rent receipt, you counted on it to start the ball rolling, and it certainly did. Who would that be?
I don't know.
Find out.
Who is it?
Turner, I want to talk to you.
Just a minute.
You still sure you're not partners, baby?
Yes. I told you the truth, Marlowe.
All right, answer it. I'll wait here in the closet with the door open wide enough for the barrel of a .38, just in case you've never been to Manila. Go on.
All right. Tommy!
Open up, hurry! Close it quick, that peeper may be around.
Who?
The one I slugged over at the cottage. He wasn't there when I went back, just some bum I scared away.
Went back?
Yeah, I went back. After you ran, there was some excitement, sweets. First, I slugged the peeper because I heard some noise in the back I thought it was you.
Me? I never returned to the cottage.
I know it. It was a louse named Babesco. I got him all right. With the very sword he was after. The little number right here in my hand. He was competition. So were you, sweets, except that I doped your angle a long time ago.
What do you mean?
Well, Voss told you something before he died in Manila. I stopped after I ran, doll. I even came back. I saw you go for his billfold. Saw him mumble something. When I ran into you again here in L.A., I knew you were swinging in the dark. It was a nice try, sweets. But you missed. Now, give me the sheath. These two belong together. Come on, hand it over. You don't want me to be rough, do you, doll?
No. Here it is.
Oh, that's better. Like I said, they belong together. Huh. That's funny. They should fit with...
What are you laughing at?
The answer, sweets, a slip of paper with a list of people on it. I think it's crumpled in the bottom of this sheath here, and that's why the sword won't go all the way home. Yeah, here it is.
A piece of paper.
A valuable piece of paper.
Sure, names and numbers of all the players. Had to...
Marlowe, he's dead, isn't he?
Yeah. It's about as dead as a guy named Eugene Voss was last week on a sidewalk in Manila. Or the party called Babesco.
What is it?
Turner's dead, but I don't think his partner is.
Marlowe, you thought I was his partner.
Hmm? Oh, yes, and I thought wrong, Claire. But now I got a little more to go on. I'll see you, honey.
Oh, no, wait. What am I supposed to do? Call the police and explain it all away as a practical joke? Marlowe, have a heart. Where are you going?
Back to my client, little dreamer. I think he can give me a line on that partner. Be good. I was an hour plus driving slowly back to the transplanted world on Crestline Drive, and all the way I kept adding and subtracting all the screwball figures I'd run into, hoping that someplace I'd find a mistake. But when I was there through the junior jungle and standing at the front door, I knew that my hunch was right.
Marlowe, you've got the sword?
Sword and sheath alike, Mr. Pound. They're in my car. Also, I got news. Babesco's dead.
Well, I'm not sorry.
So is Turner.
Well, I don't know any Turner. But why haven't you brought the sword and sheath in with you?
Because they don't count, Mr. Pound. There wasn't any code in the pattern on either one. The answer was a slip of paper jammed down in the sheath. Here. Is that what we're after?
Let me see. Yes. Yes, Marlowe, this is it. Oh, mm-hmm. I knew he wouldn't fail me. I knew Boss was loyal. I knew it.
Oh, better than that, Mr. Pound. You counted on it. And don't move a finger, Happy. It's a great night for killing. Now, go on. Into the study. We're going to use the phone.
Marlowe, you're insane.
Sure I am. So much so that I let the hairs from an affectionate Siamese cat change my mind. About everything. Keep moving.
The cat? What do you mean?
I mean the Turner who shot Eugene Voss in Manila, who murdered Bibesco out at the beach, who I just killed before he could kill me, had white hairs from a molting white Siamese cat all over his suit. What? The same kind of white hairs I got on mine when Shushu rubbed against me. Now go on, open that door. In other words, Pound Turner was a friend here, not foe, and from there on in it all figures. Or do you still think I'm insane?
Yes, I... No, Marlowe, you're right.
You bet I'm right.
Turner was in this with me. A partner, you might say. You see, I knew that Eugene Voss was worried about competitors.
Like Bibesco, go on.
Well, I knew that Voss would see I got his client's list, the pearl dealers, if his life was really in danger.
That gave you a brilliant idea. Put his life in danger. So you sent Turner to Manila to kill Voss once the list was on its way. Oh, how neat. Tell me, clean cut, why didn't you let Turner know about the sword at once?
Because he was tricked. Voss planted a fake list at his hotel, hoping that Turner would find it and go his merry way, which Turner did. He didn't know it was fake until he arrived here this morning.
Which, of course, didn't affect the scheduled murder. Nice and thorough, aren't you? Or have you left out some little detail I should know, like why you bothered having Turner get mixed up in this at all tonight? I would have brought the sword and sheath back for you without him.
I know you would, Marlowe. That's why I hired you. But I also knew that there was a good chance that in finding the sword, you would also find that I deal in opium, not pearls.
In op... Oh, fine. And Turner was right behind me all the way, ready to kill me if I found that out from say, Bibesco, huh?
Precisely. Yeah. Turner was right behind you, Marlowe, even as Heidecki is right behind you now in the dark. You fool. Why do you think I kept talking here, kept confessing? Speak up, Heidecki. Heidecki, talk!
He can't, Mr. Pound.
What?
Heidecki is very unconscious.
He's what?
I hit him with a vase. A Filipino vase.
No, you're lying. Heidecki!
Pound, hold it. Pound!
Oh, my leg. Oh,
Marlowe, you've got him. Marlowe!
What's the matter?
Behind the curtain.
There's nothing there, honey. Huh? Nothing more than a friendly cat named Shushu. It took a long time. It always does. But finally, the police in Los Angeles and the police in Manila knew exactly who had done what to whom and why. All of which left Henry Pound, the vicious little character who wouldn't even recognize honor among thieves, with a short, unpleasant future. And I thought about him and every rotten thing he'd done as I walked through his imported island jungle to my car. I thought about him and Bibesco, about Turner, the houseboy, about Eugene Voss, and I didn't think about Claire Saunders until I got to my car. I was in behind the wheel, headlights on. The words were written in lipstick the length and breadth of my windshield.
Phil, dear, I stepped out when nobody was looking. But don't fret. Because from here on out, I'm going to be very good. I've learned my lesson. P.S. My plane doesn't leave until morning. Would you like to help me
wait for it at the airport cafe. They have good food and they're open all night. Claire. Airport cafe. It's an hour's drive. Unless I hurry.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced and directed by Norman McDonald and are written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Gerald Moore can currently be seen starring in Republic's The Blonde Bandit. Featured in our cast were Gene Bates, Junius Matthews, Barney Phillips, Byron Kane, Paul Frees, and Anthony Barrett. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time an old Spanish woman who cared. A red head and a mink who didn't, and a green suede button beside a corpse, all led me to a wounded man with a gun in his hand, cornered on a warehouse roof.
Now, stay tuned for Pursuit, which follows immediately on most of these same CBS stations. This is Roy Rowan speaking. This is CBS, where Burns and Allen are heard every Wednesday night, the Columbia Broadcasting System.